Okay, here we go.
Something.
Okay, here we go.
It's time again for the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm your host, James Hatton, with...
I am Podcast Rob.
Excellent. We are back once again with another fun-filled adventure in the land of shit.
We are. This is kind of a pet project of ours. We've talked about this, maybe not necessarily on the air a whole lot, but through... you know, the internets and in-person stuff. We've discussed various episodes that we've wanted to do.
Yeah, I think this one, I don't want to say it was one of the ones we put on the original list, but this episode was, I think it's one of the ones that we were like, yeah, there's probably going to be multiple volumes of this one too, because, not for nothing, I'm sure some of the listeners have garnered, I've watched a lot of movies.
Yes.
And not usually the ones that everyone... For some reason, I have a calling towards, like, the old USA Up All Nights with Rhonda Shearer and Gilbert Gottfried.
Sure.
The Fox used to have, like, a mid-afternoon movie on Saturday afternoons, Mystery Science Theater. I love myself some shitty movies.
Yeah. Yeah, schlock can be fun. Can be very fun. And just because it's a bad movie doesn't mean it can't be entertaining.
Oh,
I kind
of
think that's
worst.
Where we're... We're headed with this episode.
Some of the worst are the best.
Absolutely.
So this whole episode is dedicated to bad films that we love.
Yes, great bad movies.
Yes, movies so bad that we actually enjoy watching.
Yes. You, the listening audience, may not agree. The opinions held in this podcast are hours and hours alone.
But my hope is that at the end of this show, there's going to be one of our listeners, or that listener, our one listener.
Right.
Dawn. Is going to... I love the rest of you, too. Is going to be like, I think I want to see that.
It's funny that you say that, because I'm printing out, you know, some research on my list of five movies that I came up with. And I'm thinking back to stuff that we did on, like, the sequels episode... or the Fast and the Furious episode, and how many people messaged me or emailed me or texted me and said, you know, I had never seen past, like, number two, but after listening to your podcast, I, like, took a day and just powered through all of them, and they were really good. And I just get the same sense that those same people are going to text us back and go, fuck you! I trusted you!
I look to you people for pop culture relevance, and you fed me this.
Why would you do this to me?
You gave me robo-jocks.
Yeah, but they're going to be like car wrecks. You're not going to be able to look away until they're all done.
Robo-jocks being one of the movies I cut off my list in the last minute because I had too many that I would literally... Rob says to me right at the beginning of the show, yeah, you have list 1 through 4, and then tied in fifth place are 11 films.
Yeah.
So Robot Jocks caught off the list, but that's another one you can go out and look for.
Yeah, exactly.
Rajim like Bog. It's a quote from Robot Jocks.
So do you want to kick this thing off? We each picked five.
Yeah, we did.
Five of our favorite bad movies.
Yeah, this is the standard Something Cast format that we've come to like and enjoy. List five things. We can riff a whole episode off of 10 things altogether.
Yep.
Let's see. Where do we start? I think we should start with, like... I'm going to start with the one that we've talked about, I think, multiple episodes. Like, we've both been like, yeah, we love this film. And it's Flash Gordon. It's the Queen, Sam Rockwell. Not Sam Rockwell.
Brian Blessed. Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell. No, Sam Ra is his name in the movie. Whatever. Sam.
Wow.
My laugh achieved in... T-minus 5 minutes.
Wow, we have shit the bed on this episode already.
Yeah, whatever. Fuck you people.
What's his name? Timothy Dalton.
Sam Jones! Holy shit, Sam Jones.
Timothy Dalton's in this movie, too.
Topol. But yeah, I mean, it probably, I fell in love with this movie first because of the Queen soundtrack. Because yeah. I was raised on a Queen soundtrack. I know I've mentioned that. And
yeah, yeah.
So it's bright, it's shiny, and it's got the arena fight. There's nothing about Flash Gordon that isn't just an enjoyable, I'm going to sit and watch a movie that, is it good? I don't know, it's good. And there are other people who are like, no, that movie's a real cheese fest.
Yeah, it is.
But I think it's part of the fact that they wanted it to look like a cheese fest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that movie came out in, I don't know, 81, 79, somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was beyond that we're making shitty high technicolor 1970s dystopian future sort of movies. So the movie still does that with those crazy light effects and the sky's purple. And,
right, right.
You know, and Ming is not really villainous, but he's got that wonderful voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to play with things a while.
It definitely hit at the right time.
Yeah.
And it really put Brian Blessed on the map as a pop culture icon. Because I can't watch anything else that he's in without my brain going, flying blind on a rocket cycle?
I was at a con, and I was working security or something. I'm working the escalator. And a dude in full, and I gotta say, full, dedicated to the bit, Ming outfit.
Nice.
Comes walking up. And he's a little bit taller, full bald, full goatee. And being me, I was just like, your lordship. And I get kind of, and he just puts out his hand, and he's got the big ring. And I'm like, oh, you fuck.
I have to now.
I do. I started this. I have to finish it.
Exactly. Gotta power through it.
So I lean, and I kind of, I don't think I kissed the ring, but I at least like, put my, you know, forehead
sure,
to it,
sure,
and I poked
sure.
it. And he just kind of gave me a sage nod and an eyebrow, and I'm like, fuck.
Nice.
But yeah.
Nice. Owned it.
But I love the soundtrack. It's got some Brian May guitar stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't do anywhere else. It's just him just, what do we need here? Just play football music for the next
yeah,
5 minutes.
Exactly.
Beep, 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 beep. Yep. So good. All right, so. I think that's the easy one. That's before we get into the deep hurting for me.
Yeah, yeah. These are all superficial wounds.
Yeah,
I think
this
so
is
far.
Glancing blows of bad cinema.
Yeah. As my first one, I'm gonna do Warlock.
Another good one. That's another fun one.
Julian Sands. He kind of fell off the face of the earth after this one and the sequel.
Yeah,
I don't
think
two,
he wasn't
did.
He?
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because I remember seeing a commercial for this movie, like, during a Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah, this movie wasn't small.
And, right, but then the next commercial I saw for it was in, like, November of that same year. And it really weirded people out. Like, didn't this movie, like, come out already? Why are we seeing another commercial almost a year later?
Okay.
And it really was one of those, I think they put the commercials out and some test audiences didn't like some things, so they had to go back and reshoot and tweak a few things, and it delayed the release of it because there was a good long time between the first bunch of commercials came out and the last bunch came out.
Which is kind of, if you give it some thought, do you really think the Super Bowl crowd is the audience to be testing this commercial to? I mean, if the movie's about a warlock showing up into present time, and it's almost a horror flick.
Yeah, it really did want to try to be big, though.
I mean,
Julia Sands, Laurie Singer.
I did have a poster.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing else.
In my nerd den in high school, I had a Warlock poster next to, like, the Ozzy Osbourne sitting on the toilet and, like, the Crow poster with the flaming bird. We had a Warlock poster, Julian Sands with his hand out like he was going to offer us a candy.
Yeah, Julian Sands couldn't even be bothered to come back for the direct-to-video third film, which I didn't even know existed.
Warlock 3 Electric. Boogatree.
The End of Innocence was the third one. But he was in Warlock and Warlock the Armageddon. I just remember like the horrible overacting that Julian Sands did.
Oh, yeah.
He had that creepy mug, though. You know, he had like the very like Lucius Malfoy
yes.
hair, you know, pulled back in the tight ponytail. And he had that... I look back and I almost think that Lucius Malfoy tried to emulate Julian Sands in a lot of his mannerisms, the way he carried himself, as he was just so much more pompous than that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I see the connection. That's
yeah.
pretty fantastic.
But just his over at the Grand Grimoire. all of Julian Sands' horrible overacting in the movie, and the CGI was really bad.
Cutting edge.
It was when, you know, flying things still had that kind of blue haze around it to show that, hey, this isn't really here.
Yeah. Not the really, really good CGI where it looks like, it's making trajectory. No, when it's coming at you, like, it's just getting bigger.
Yeah.
Whatever's coming at you, there's no direction, there's no wind velocity, no, it's just a flapping shape.
You can almost see the mouse pointer on that corner icon just dragging it to the lower left corner, just making the scale bigger.
I remember that was part of an era of movies. Like, it probably, I want to say it came out around the same time as the original Prophecy, too. Like, we were all into, like, those wannabe horror-ish, wannabe fantasy, can't really tell.
Wannabe occult. Yeah. It all kind of tapped into that same thing. I will say the CGI at the very end, when the big, huge, you know, demon hand comes out of the ground, that actually looked pretty cool. But a lot of the rest of the CGI, and it was just bad.
Yeah, I don't remember.
This
was
89, so I mean, it was right in the middle of that horror, occult, Prince of Darkness, Omen 3 kind of occult schlock movie stuff out there.
You want to know what? This is another one of those movies that I'd be like, on a boring night, I'd be like, just throw on Warlock again, see how bad it is.
Oh, yeah.
I would totally do that without a problem.
I can see you doing that, absolutely. And then you'll text me the next morning and be like, what did you do, Ray?
What I do like is that you said, yeah, you'd do that. Not I would do it. I don't want to watch this movie again. No,
it's on my list. I wouldn't do it. I've seen it once already.
Fine.
Not a good touch there.
So, for me, this might not even be a so bad it's good, because there are people that really love this franchise on my next one. I don't know why.
Okay.
There are people who really love the Tremors franchise.
Ooh, I just kind of looked up and caught the movie poster picture right before you said that. I think it was a Kevin Bacon thing.
I guess, because he's only in the, is he in more than one?
Was he in the first two?
He might have been in the second one too, or second one as well, Aftershocks. No, he was not.
So he was just in the first one.
Yeah, Michael Gross was the consistent, you know, the dad from Family
Ties.
Oh,
yeah, the crazy dude with the bunker and all the guns, right?
And I rewatched Tremors not long ago, and that one still holds up as just a fun, schlocky horror movie.
It's still, I think there's a couple of them on Netflix.
Yeah. They get dumber as you go, obviously. Well. And then I don't think I've ever seen an episode of the TV series. There was a TV series.
But that I was unaware of.
Yeah, but they get smarter and they evolve. Like the second one's, the second one's the one that fly the graboids. By the end of the first one, they figured out how to kill them. Like they got this knackered. Like this is not a big deal. So then the Tremors evolve, and then by the third one, they literally have names like Ass Blasters. Swear to God, Ass Blasters.
Nice.
That's a thing. But yeah, the first one is there's a bunch of spots that still have that kind of intensity. Kevin Bacon's in his prime.
Right.
It's just overall just a, I don't know. I don't even think that this is like a bad movie. I just think it's a bad whole franchise.
Sure.
But the first one you can sit and watch and enjoy is, I just want to watch a shitty horror movie. Cool. This is gonna be a good one. And there's some suspense in it. All right, fine.
Now, this is young Kevin Bacon talking. I mean, this is like Flatliners Kevin Bacon.
1996. Yeah. Maybe even a little after Flatliners, but yeah.
Yeah, right around that era. Kind of his first.
I love Flatliners. Oh, that's another movie I love.
That's good stuff.
That's damn good.
Kind of his first prime that Kevin Bacon has had, because he's kind of had a couple. You know, he kind of comes and goes.
Yeah, this is well beyond the Footloose Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
We are now somewhere in the, like, Few Good Men Kevin Bacon.
I gotcha. Right.
But, and, yeah, he plays just kind of the pretty boy in a flannel shirt. The movie's all very deep in the South. Nobody's doing shit. We live in the Dust Bowl. Yep. Kill us. And six people get trapped on the top of rocks.
Right.
The movie.
In the desert, nobody cares if you scream.
Exactly. Let us die.
Exactly. We don't care. Let's get over with.
But I highly recommend the first one. As you go deeper into the we'll call it the Tremors mythos. It starts to disjoint a bit, but if you want to see a movie about giant jumping land underground dwellers that shoot shit out of their asshole, then please, Tremors 3 is for you.
Well, I mean, with such a marketing campaign, how can one resist?
Yeah, there's actually four movies. I don't even remember the fourth one. I'm sure I've seen most. I think I've seen all four movies. I didn't see the fourth one. Michael Gross wasn't even in the fourth one. The Legend Begins, which I guess is the prequel.
Yeah, or a requel, or
I don't. I've never
like
seen
that.
It, but he was on the series. He was on the TV series.
Wow.
So apparently there's a video game too. Jesus. They were like the Highlander people, man. They were just going to put that shit on everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Tremors the bib for your baby. Tremors the cat pajamas.
Yeah, milk it for every dime you got.
You know, I'd probably get a Tremors sleeping bag. Like the Sarlacc one or the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The, what is it? The
Tauntaun.
Tauntaun.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd get a Tremors sleeping bag.
I can definitely see you getting a Tremors sleeping bag.
I wonder if I could do this for Halloween next year.
I'm going to hop around to Halloween parties in my Tremor sleeping bag.
Yes.
Nice.
All right, back to you, sir. What do you got?
All right, my second one is one that I have mentioned before, and I know it's one that some people may agree with, some people may not. It's kind of an ongoing game with me and Fact Check Manny. Every time I stumble across this show on TV, this movie on TV, I have to call him. And I have to talk to him like the one character.
Of course.
Because this is a train wreck movie. This is almost a bad movie that I almost don't enjoy watching because it was just that stupid. But I can't look away.
Right.
It's First Night.
Yeah. I know.
My first problem, I mean, I'm taking Richard Gere right out of the equation.
Oh, so we're just ignoring Richard Gere as the problem.
Yes. My biggest problem is this is...
I wonder who it is.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where, you know, Sean Connery needs money. Which is, to me, sounds like a ridiculous statement because if you're Sean Connery...
Sir Sean Connery,
yeah,
sir.
The last thing you fucking need is a buck.
Zardoz.
But you've got Sean Connery, you've got Julia Ormond, it's Sean Connery playing King Arthur, you know, in his 70s, to Julia Ormond's Guinevere in, like, her late 20s.
Something like that.
And it's just, when they're doing this whole wipeout thing where they've got the gauntlet that no man has been able to get through, and fucking Lancelot comes up and kind of just prances his way through, and you look at the scenery, and... It's right out of Disney World.
Yeah, it's too, you know, bright. It's very, very cheery.
Greetings, I am Arthur, your king. Please excuse the Scottish accent to celebrate the gathering of the contestants. We have taken the liberty of decorating the city of Camelot in pastel pinks and blues and... dressing the local populace in complimentary colors.
It really is like you're watching the film version of Medieval Times.
It's worse than that because you've got the Knights of the Away Team.
You know, get soup.
The army, you know, the Knights of the Round Table are literally wearing away team uniforms with little metal shields on their shoulder. That's their armor. And so many of these battle scenes, there's just one battle scene at night. And it's supposed to be the Knights of the Round, you know, running towards the camera on horseback. And it's pitch black with little glints of silver every now and then, which is supposed to be the moonlight shining off their armor. And it's just, like, so painfully obvious that they took four guys, got some reflection, cut, paste, 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 and made it look like a mass of people. And then they do the Monty Python and the Holy Grail gambit. You see this reflective stuff running towards the camera, and then you cut to the enemy army, and they're, you know, rallying the troops and getting everybody in line. And then they cut back, and it's that same picture of them running towards the camera. And it's like, this movie is complete shit.
Yeah.
I give them props for not doing the Excalibur storyline, which almost every Arthur movie does, and they went with the Maleagant storyline, which was new and different. Hey, cool, they're going in a different... But it was just... It's crap. I mean, if you're going to pick one of these nine to just not bother watching, please, for the love of God, listening audience, make it this one, because I don't want that albatross around my neck.
What's funny about that one is because of the cast, because you have Sean Connery and you have Richard Gere, who is, like, right in his prime. Like, what is that, 95, 96, 90? It's early
95,
90s.
95, yeah.
There you go. It was a movie with... I remember the commercials. I remember the arena, the gauntlet that he had to run. Like, I remember thinking, because I love game movies. I love any movie that features, like, somebody in a game or a contest. Like, I love Mad World type movies. Tron.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So, Richard Gere is going to run the gauntlet. This is very dangerous, and it's a swinging fucking poles. And so, and that's just the commercials.
Yeah.
So, looking back on it, I will say that that choice might be the highest lauded movie that we have going on this list.
Oh, knowing what I still have to come and guessing what you have to come, I would probably say that is the biggest moneymaker out of the 10.
Yeah, out of the 10, and which is funny because it is pretty atrocious. I remember even, because we were doing, that was around the time we were doing the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
And I distinctly remember being like, yep. That.
I want to say that this came out after Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Makes sense. There was an era there.
And once you got Sean Connery playing King Richard coming in at the end, mm-hmm. I think the casting to make him King Arthur, not that Robin Hood was an amazing movie, it was a fun movie. I mean, Kevin Costner being Kevin Costner, it was still an entertaining movie. I think that kind of casting really was like, oh, Sean Connery is King Arthur?
Yep.
I guess I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, the level of suspension of disbelief with Sean Connery characters is epic.
We'll let him get away with anything.
Yeah, he's playing an Egyptian metallurgist, he's playing a Russian sub-captain, he's playing, and the whole time, he's working for MI6 in London, the whole time, he's got this Scottish accent. And we're just, okay, sure, he's a Russian sub-captain.
Yeah, that's all good.
One ping, please, for Shelley.
Man who's never he's a guy from Egypt who's never a Spaniard who has never tasted haggis.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're not going to be the person to tell Sean fucking Connery that he's doing it wrong,
especially if you're a woman.
Yes, yes. So yeah, that's an entry number 2 into my list of 5.
My next one has probably the best, and it's an arguable thing. Oh, strike that. I have Flash Gordon. I was going to say, apparently all my movies have, like, really good soundtracks.
Next one, cult followings.
They do. I lean towards cult movies.
Right.
I always have. Which is funny, because I really usually despise, like, the big, famous cult classic movies.
Sure.
Like, I can't stand Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right.
Well, if one more person wants me to watch Repo. Ugh.
Once cult drifts to mainstream, it loses its luster.
Yeah, I learned, and I've learned it probably in the last few years more than anything, very much because of Who. What ruins any product for me is its fans.
Right, I can see that.
Well, again,
it's the whole mainstream thing.
Yeah, it's even within that, like, sub-nerdy category, but I guess it's bigger now because we're all on the internet. But
sure.
The minute that, like, I'm reading about what fans think about Harry Potter and they're telling me, like, oh, it's pretty fucking obvious that Draco and Luna were hooking up, or whatever their pet theory is of the day.
Sure.
I'm just like, right. It's just a book.
Top Dollar said it best in The Crow. The idea has become the institution. What was the idea?
Very good.
The minute that happens, I'm with you.
So we go back to this soundtrack by a little-known, mid-known punk band from California, the Dickies. But the movie is Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you've seen this film.
Years ago, but I have seen it, yes.
Because it's an age-old tale. It really
again,
is.
Again, on Netflix, too. You can watch it.
It's so good. This one I would rewatch over and over again.
Sure. Well, you don't have a clown phobia.
No, not in the slightest. And if you have a clown phobia, this is not the movie for you, because most of the horrifying clown images you've seen, a lot of them are derivative from a couple of the clowns in this movie.
Yeah, very much so.
There's the one little short midgety guy. And I know I've seen him in tons of other I'm going to be a scary clown.
Right.
Here's a picture of what I'm using, and it's him. His name's Peanut or Minnie or something in the film. It's an age-old story. Boy meets girl. circus is coming to town. They want to go see the circus. Nah, circus is a bunch of intergalactic aliens that are bent on the destruction of humanity. Classic.
As old as time.
It really is.
Yep.
Beauty and the evil circus clowns.
Exactly.
But it's totally tongue-in-cheek. The horror isn't that horrific.
No.
The murder is, you know, they throw popcorn at you and you explode. Or they're making, my favorite one in the entire thing is they're doing hand puppets. Or there's
right.
There's a bunch of people at a bus stop. And the clown comes up. And this is when they're all like, oh, there's clowns in town before the clowns. This is where the clowns are, they're doing a murder montage. And the clown goes, hmm? And he starts to, like, move his hands. And you see Big Shadow in the back. And he makes a... I don't know, he makes like a bunny rabbit, and you're like, oh, that's awesome, that's awesome. And then he makes like Abraham Lincoln, and you're like, I don't know how you would do that with your hand. And then he does Whistler's mother in the rocking chair, and you're like, all right, wait, stop. Now he's a dinosaur, and it eats all the people.
Yeah.
Excellent. It's wonderful. Yeah. But yeah, I have the soundtrack. The soundtrack is, I probably like the soundtrack more than the movie. But
that's fair enough.
Because it's I love myself some West Coast surfer punk.
Right.
And the Dickies are kind of it for me. But I know there are tons of horror aficionados who like that kind of schlocky, culty-ishy
sure.
horror. And Killer Clowns fits right in there.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It starred, what's his name? Grant Kramer, it looks like here. He's in, like, a bunch of kind of weird movies. He was, I want to say he was, is he the one I'm thinking of? Sorry, I just want to make sure I'm talking about the right guy before we're like, asshole, Grant Kramer was.
Was he the captain of DS9?
No, that was Serrano. Was that it? That one's yours.
Oh yeah, I gotta
you
own
get
that
to
one.
Have that one.
I get to own that one all day.
Yeah. All right. I'm not gonna figure it out in time enough for this to be in any way, shape, or form interesting. That might be the movie I was thinking of. I remember him from like two or three movies. And if it's the same guy that I'm thinking, he vaguely looks like Tori Belleci from MythBusters, and he was in one movie with Amy Dolenz, where Amy Dolenz played a genie.
Oh,
good Christ Almighty!
I remember that movie, but she was smoking that in that movie though.
She's in a couple movies, and now she's in a bunch of weirdo Christian science fiction films.
Yeah, no, I remember her. Yeah, no, I remember that movie absolutely, because I remember like the whole gold lamé hammer pants and bikini top kind of thing.
So, I wanted to let everybody remember. Just even though Killer Clowns may not be the greatest movie, you can kind of follow the Kevin Bacon train, 6 degrees to Amy Dolenz.
Yeah, yeah, Mickey Dolenz makes a hot daughter.
Damn right he does.
No, I'm sorry. Mickey Dolenz himself does not. No, he created a hot daughter. He does not make a...
Do not watch anything she's done in the last 5 years, though. She now does weird Christian science fiction. Like
Left Behind stuff?
Yeah, exactly like that. Because
Kirk Cameron did the Left Behind.
It's not specifically Left Behind. But they're probably from like similar... churchy movie making folk.
Really?
Yeah, we were sitting there watching some science fiction at home, and we were like, "Oh, let's watch some bad sci-fi. This sounds good." Amy Dolenz is in it, and it wasn't just me. My one buddy Chris,
yes?
Who was like, "Yes, let's see how this has transpired."
Go on,
because the movie was from, I don't know, 2008, 2007,
right?
And a bunch of people are all like heading off to one specific locale that they've been called to as the apocalypse is coming, and then like, the second coming. And you're like, oh, good God, what's going on, you poor woman? What did they do to you? Amy Dolenz.
Speaking of bad sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yes. This is a Barry Bostwick vehicle.
Vehicle?
From 1982. Directed by Hal Needham. Of Smokey and the Bandit fame.
You are so building this up.
I am. It's Megaforce.
This is the one I didn't on your list. I was like, I don't think I know this one at all.
It's a very 80s poster. You know, it's
with a name like Megaforce, how could you
not? It's Barry Bostwick in his, you know, almost like flesh tone LeMay unitard.
Ugh.
With the blonde windblown feathered hair and the blue bandana.
Is there a rainbow?
Hugging the girl of choice, all these sci-fi vehicles and laser beams getting shot out from behind it. Their shoulder patch, deeds not words. But the tagline, there has never been a superhero like Ace Hunter. Ace. That name right there alone Hunter. Should, yeah. Now, this is a bad movie. Let's make no mistake. This is...
I just pulled up the poster.
Yeah, this is not a good movie.
The movie has a tagline that that sends fear into the heart of any, I don't know, like, grumpy prospector. I don't
yeah,
know what, who
exactly.
This is. Deeds, not words.
This movie was a critical and commercial failure.
Yeah,
nominated for 3 Razzie Awards. Worst Picture, Worst Director, Worst Supporting Actor. Michael Beck is the villain in this one. And I believe, I gotta look his name. His name is Duke. And the funny thing is that they're childhood friends. Yeah, that's an even worse movie poster, because that almost looks like, you know.
If you throw this up into the images, Google Images, there's a couple posters here. There's one where Barry Bostwick looks like a C-level cast-off from Xanadu.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He's just glowing pink with the force that left him.
the good guy and the bad guy, it's like the good guy, the Mega Force is a secret military operation that is so secret, like they've had their personnel files wiped, they don't exist anymore, they're not on any database, nobody admits their existence. Exactly. And the villains are, it's almost like a Che Guevara kind of villain type, you know, we're taking over, you know, more and more territory, and we're trying to get into Mexico and then into Texas and stuff. So there's this whole big film scene out in the desert.
It's like a political overtone.
The guy from, I can't remember his name, Desmond from Knight Rider, the old guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He plays like the colonel.
The penny.
Yeah, he plays the very wrong Desmond. He plays the colonel in this one that Megaforce works for.
Every poster looks like it came from the cartoon Mask.
Yeah, and the cartoon Mask really stole a lot from this.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. But like I said, the good guy and the bad guy are childhood friends. So before their big showdown in the desert, they end up having dinner with each other, and the colonel is there, and he's like, "Oh well, we can arrest this man." And he's like, "What do you mean arrest him? We're having dinner." And this is the good guy going, no, we can't arrest him. We're in the middle of hors d'oeuvres. And their little tagline with each other is, "Ace, you were always a card. Duke, you were always a prince." It's, yeah, that level of badness. I had to print out some quotes from this movie.
Oh, good, because yeah. I don't think we could live without this.
Yeah, they've got this science, you know, their chief science and research and development guy. Is Eggstrom is his name, and they call him the Egg. So it's here comes the Egg, and Ace's second in command, Dallas, goes, "And that's no yoke."
Oh.
And Eggstrom goes, "Dallas, when a person doesn't have less on, they have
a moron."
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's dialogue ripped right out of the movie.
Oh.
This movie is known for having the absolute worst blue screen sequences in movie history. And that's not just my opinion. This has been, like, voted on by,
you know,
internet
cracked articles.
And movie people. Yes. The worst blue screen ever.
Like, you can see, like, the car is hovering a foot off the ground, and you see the wheels spinning and, like, the footage moving in the background.
It's a skydiving scene, and from sternum to knees is just a flat line because of the table they're lying on. But they have these dune buggies and these motorcycles that have the, like, rockets and missiles attached to them.
They're very masky, all right.
And they're you know, basically like hobby shop missiles that you can buy. So it wasn't CGI. They legit had this stuff all wired up. And they're, you know, trailing across the desert, and they're shooting these missiles off. And they've got the kind of laser guns going off. But the military, like the U.S. military, got in touch with these people because they said, you know what, we understand it's a schlocky movie and everything, but your dune buggy design really interests us with the roof-mounted rocket launchers and everything else. So so talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh boy.
It was really weird. Like, the end, the most iconic image of this is we have to get to the C-140 transport so we can get out of here because we're massively outnumbered by the enemy force.
Mm-hmm.
all the dune buggies and motorcycles ripping across this, you know, dried lake bed canyon, and they throw on their smoke screen, and each smoke screen is like a different color. So you've got this giant rainbow screen.
I knew there was
smoke
a rainbow in this film.
Out across this. The plane takes off. Ace Hunter, nowhere to be found, on his motorcycle, chasing after the transport as it's taking off, hits the 1-2. The 1 releases these wings. 2's a jetpack on the motorcycle. Second worst blue screen scene in cinematic history in the same movie. Absolutely terrible. You could probably YouTube
the whole movie.
Megaforce skydive scene, and you will... see exactly what I'm talking about. Absolutely hard.
This sounds like a film that even after you having told me, I now want to watch. Because
I owned this on Laserdisc.
Oh, sir.
Yeah, not like CD. No, I know. The Laserdisc that you had to put in, it was in the hard plastic case, mm-hmm. and then halfway through the movie, you had to take out and flip over. Yeah.
Oh, I know it. We used to have, my mother had one of those.
Yeah, video disc.
Yeah.
Yep, Megaforce.
That sounds
such a terrible movie, and but if it showed up on TV, it never will. But if it did, I would be like, "Well, Hatton, hit pause. Wait, Megaforce is on. We gotta finish watching this. Recording later."
Yeah, you and I were discussing about one of our other episodes. We'll get to it in the near future about people watching television and how many people watch TV and how we'll never have as many people watching like some of the biggest moments of television that many people watching again. To the same, realize that we are never going to have to see a bunch of shitty movies on, like, Fox. Because all of us have video on demand. We'll just throw on something else.
Yeah.
But there are video on demand channels filled with shit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I drink it in. Oh, I drink your milkshake. It is so freaking good.
My sour milkshake brings all the Hattons to the yard.
They do. I drink it up. Captain Power, which nobody ever remembers, and I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point in time. It's a show that basically you bought the toys that you'd fire the toy at the TV and you'd get points and shit. And when the bad guys, and there was like epileptic seizure fit fucking strobe lights reacted to the gun toy.
Picks.
So you, and these were written by J. Michael Straczynski, who's, I'm a big fan of, comic book writer. Yeah, this is where he cut his teeth. Before he like got the gig at He-Man.
Oh my God!
You can find these episodes, and I went looking, and this isn't my choice. Just other schlocky, wonderful.
Right, sure.
The only person on that show that had a career beyond Captain Power is the main, like the thug guy.
Right.
Plays the brother of Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Running Man. That's it. And now there's some of you going, did Arnold Schwarzenegger have a brother in The Running Man? Yes. His name was Sven.
That's not a big claim to fame, though, say, hey, I had a career after this stuff ended up.
And he's the only one.
I was guy number 4.
That's what he was. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yep. So, anyway, back to... bad schlocky cinema. That's bad schlocky TV, which we can save that for another episode. I think that's a good one.
I thought you were going to say Bodhi Lee.
Oh, no. That's another good one.
The Photon TV show.
Photon was...
climbing in my closet.
Same general era. Laser Tag, Photon, Captain Power. They were all there.
So terrible.
Yeah, wonderful. I want to see the Laser Tag cartoon now. Ooh. Anyway. My next movie is another in the horror genre. This movie me and this movie had a weird relationship because there was, back during the VCR days, and you go to the VHS store, and this was before there was a lot of chains around. There was probably one or two, like Marquee Video and things like that. But there was one video store that I liked better than all the rest. It was down the street, and I loved it because you walk in, and like they kept the air conditioning really, really, really crisp. The whole place was already like bleeding cold in the summer. And they had these movie posters. The place was kind of tiny and very cramped, and it had like a huge porn room. Like it was one of those like mom and pop owned, so they had a lot of the sidetrack stuff. But they had one movie poster in the room with the air conditioner. And when I was a little kid, I would always want to go into that room because that was brutal cold, and I liked the cold. And it was The Stuff.
All right.
And for those who don't know the movie The Stuff, it's a movie about yogurt that eats you.
Yeah.
But I asked my mom whether I could see it. She goes, "No, get something else." a lot of the original movies that did not make my list, Gymkata, for example, came from this movie store where I originally was like, I want to watch this. So finally, after years of asking, I said, I want to get this movie. Stuff. It's about Killer Yogurt. And she goes, yeah, fine, you can get the stupid movie about the Killer Yogurt.
But it's healthy, Mom. It's about yogurt.
No.
Yeah, not so much.
Have you ever seen this stuff?
Yes.
It's kind of one of those weird classics.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's one of those ones, I think it's kind of the sub classic. It's like when your friends are like, yeah, I got one that you haven't seen yet, and they
exactly.
bring out the stuff.
Yeah.
Because like the most famous person in it's like Michael Moriarty and Garrett Morris. Like, that's all you got. Garrett Morris.
Garrett Morris.
So the short premise of the film, again, a natal tale. I believe it's a meteor that falls from the sky, and it has this white goop in it.
Hmm.
And somebody who works for an ad agency goes, and very smartly, tastes it. And this shit is delish. We can market it. I don't know. This is where some of the plot falls, because... How much of this meteor did they really get? Like, they got a lot of it.
I'm sorry. Meteor crashes to Earth, cracks open, alien goop inside. Somebody tastes it. Now, right around here is where the plot starts to fall apart.
You know what? I do believe it was bubbling from the Earth.
That was probably one of the most brilliant segues you have made in this podcast, Mr. Haddon. That was awesome.
But what's
I think you're correct. I don't think it was in the meteor. Yeah, I think the meteor cracked a fissure of stuff.
Yes, and this is very creamy white goop. It looks very much like fluff. What's wonderful is that this people are eating it, and there's like very retroactive-y commercials in it. You know, what are you going to have? I'm going to have the stuff. Got to have the stuff. Got to have the stuff. You can see that they were trying to make some sort of political statement about over-commercialization, but when you have a movie that consists of the people who are dying of this, the death sequence just being like, just spit that shit out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
just let that burble over your lower chin, and we're going to cut to something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, writhe on the ground, and we're gonna do the dry ice effect around you.
Yeah.
And just let that shit pour down the side of your face. It's an easy effect.
Sure.
There's a couple of them that it sizzles people away, but you don't see that as much as you see just people vomiting this shit all over the
film.
Right. It's really all there is to this movie. It's not good. It's a movie I'd pull out drunk. I wouldn't watch on the regular. I have a copy because
you get drunk.
I can't on occasion. And it's on Netflix now. I know it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I keep it on my list just to keep threatening it to my wife. Like, do you want to watch this stuff? No. Can we watch a good thing? Can we watch True Detective? No. Are you sure you don't want to watch the man-eating yogurt movie?
Yeah.
It's got Garrett Morris.
Come on.
Which,
cut it off your bucket list.
Well, do you know what her question, you know, the first question that comes out of her mouth
Who's Garrett Morris?
Exactly. Who the fuck is Garrett Morris?
That right there is, you know, an indictment of hitting the play button.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So you understand, so you can learn.
Exactly.
Who is Garrett Morris? Does anybody really know who Garrett Morris truly is?
It sounds like a pulp spy thriller. Who's Garrett Morris?
Is this your fifth already?
I have two left.
Okay, good.
And I'm debating what order to do them in.
They're both...
I think I'm going to save the popular one for last.
Okay, so you went the other way than I did, because mine are getting progressively worse.
Yeah, I'm going to go with this other one. Musically, we mentioned in the Desert Island episode, I am a big fan of Kiss.
Yes.
This is not a good movie at all. As a matter of fact, I actually made, years ago, I was living in an apartment, two of my friends who worked at the Renaissance Festival with, I almost got the shit beat out of me because we were very drunk and we were talking about, you know, we were watching, you know, movies. And I said, oh, I got this great movie. And I pull out Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. And I put it in the VCR. And, like, they were all into it for, like, the first half hour, 40 minutes. Because they're going, okay, you know, he said it's good, so this is going to get good. And it never does. And the movie ends and they just kind of, you know, you get that whole... As you're just playing through the leader on the tape at the end of the videotape.
No, my question is...
And they just slowly turn and look at me, you know, as if like, so how do we get those 2 hours back now?
Was this a phase in your life where you're like, no, it really is a good film?
No, I knew it was bad.
Oh, okay, good.
I knew it was bad, but at the time I thought it was a good bad movie.
Yeah,
well, it's kind of drifted almost again into that. This is a bad bad movie.
Yeah, but it has a cult following. This one has a cult following.
Yeah, it is the rock band Kiss, still in their makeup days. The plot line is they're playing at Magic Mountain Amusement Park out in California. One of their animatronics directors out at Magic Mountain wants to take over the park and then the world, and is going to kidnap Kiss and make a bunch of evil Kiss robots that will then take over the universe and the world. But this was written by Jan Michael Sherman and Don Boudet.
You keep talking. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
Because Jan Michael Sherman sounds familiar.
Produced by Joseph Barbera. And if that name sounds familiar, it should.
Yeah.
Because anytime the plot thickens in this movie, we are treated to the Mystery Machine music from Scooby-Doo. So, yeah. Hanna-Barbera Productions was the studio.
Yeah. Jan Michael Sherman sounds really familiar.
It had a $3 million budget, which is ridiculous. That had to go to, you know, the band's, you know, hooker and booze.
Only the green M&Ms.
Yeah. But the thing is that the band is not just the band. No, no. They're supernatural. Because they have a box full of talismans, and each talisman is representative of one of them. So they each have, like, special abilities. Gene Simmons obviously breathes fire.
It's obviously.
It's really bad CGI blowtorch fire.
By the way, I'm really wrong. Jan Michael Sherman did nothing.
No, you're probably thinking of Jan Michael Vincent.
Quite possibly.
Actor. Paul Stanley has the ability to hear conversations 20 feet away.
20 feet.
It's so sad. They're like, they're standing here, and on the other side of the room, there's two people leaning in, and they're talking to each other like this. And it closes up on Paul Stanley's face, and the star on his face starts glowing. And then you hear, oh, as this little red laser beam comes out and hits the other couple that now has a superimposed red star over them, and he can hear what they're saying. It's like, really? Ace Frehley can teleport people over very short distances.
Bamf.
Yeah, it's really like a hitchhiker kind of thing. He goes like, you know, tokes the thumb, and they'll just poof, poof, and show up, you know, 20 feet away. And Peter Criss can just jump really high, you know, the cat person kind of thing. But it's really, I mean, it's amazingly bad. I was describing, there's a scene where the whole band is sitting in these lifeguard chairs around a pool, sunning themselves in full Destroyer right off the album cover costume, full makeup, and these hooded cloaks that are like made out of chainmail. And the evil Gene Simmons robot had gotten loose and wreaked havoc and beat up a couple of security guards.
Is the evil Gene Simmons robot played by Gene Simmons?
He is. Okay. And the security guards come and accuse the band, and they're like, oh, that's the guy who did it. And Paul Stanley's like, that's impossible. Gene was with us all night, in that horrible Paul Stanley accent. And the security guy goes, it had to be him, or his twin brother. And Peter Criss, dubbed over, because Peter Criss had nothing to do with post-production, so it's not even his voice, except for when he sings Beth. Everything else is overdubbed by somebody else.
Oh, thank
else.
God Beth is in this film.
Yeah. That's impossible. Gene's brother's an only child. And Ace Frehley just makes parrot noises for most of them. Ah! Most of the movie. That's like his laugh. It is so absolutely horrific.
I've heard about this film more than once. You're not my only friend that likes Kiss. I've been trying to cut the number down, but they keep showing up.
But you fuckers keep showing up in my life.
Yeah, you're the only one who ever told me about their superpowers?
Oh, yes.
Most people gloss over that.
No. Here, right here. Cast. Peter Criss as himself, also known as Catman, has superhuman agility and leaping powers. Ace Frehley, also known as Space Ace, has the ability to shoot lasers and to teleport by making a hitchhiking gesture with his thumb.
That's my favorite part. It's none of all of their other powers. You're like, that's a mutant thing, whatever. I've seen it in X-Men. It's the fact that he has to make the gesture.
Yes. Gene Simmons, also known as the Demon, and Paul Stanley, known as Starchild, can shoot a laser from the star in his right eye. A similar beam emitted from his eye can control minds and allow him to hear distant conversations. But the only conversation he listens to literally is like 25 feet away. Mm-hmm. And it's not like through a crowd or on a busy train or in the middle of a nightclub. It's like an abandoned theme park. And somebody's 20 feet away, and it's just like, you know, you can do the same thing just by leaning in slightly, you know.
He says to tell Gene, shh, I'm listening to those people. And they're over the side going, shh, we shouldn't talk about this. Peter, Chris is listening.
There's a picture of the talismans.
They're like the Sailor Moon kids.
They really are. It is not good at all. I was explaining to Hatton before, just to read this little blurb about critical reception.
Please.
Prior to the film's airing, a private screening was held for Kiss as well as their management and friends. Despite positive reactions from those in attendance, Kiss hated the film for the buffoonish way it made them appear, and for years after its airing, no one who worked for the group was permitted to mention the existence of the film in their presence. That right there speaks volumes.
Which is wonderful, because I don't know, have you ever, I'm sure you have, you've listened to interviews with Gene Simmons, especially in the last, say, 10 years.
Right.
He's become a real kind of prima donna prick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure he was back then, but he was on his way up. But just to think that, like, they did this movie and they thought they were going to be hot shit action, I don't know, what is it, actions, horror? What's the genre of this thing?
What's the genre of it? Is it sci-fi?
All right, we'll call it sci-fi-ish. So they thought they were going to be like sci-fi gods with this, like heavy metal, Star Wars, Tron, fucking Kiss is going to be in the pantheon, and then they're like, we made a big stinkeroo.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm reading here, there was a VH1 program called When Kiss Ruled the World, and Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley were interviewed for it. And Simmons stated that this is a classic movie, classic if you're on drugs. And Frehley said, I couldn't stop laughing from the minute I started reading the script till the end of the filming.
All right, so they're blaming their drugs. And you want to know what? At least they own it.
Well, fair enough. It's available on DVD as part of Kissology Volume 2.
You get on that.
Yeah, exactly.
I got better things to ignore.
Like your next movie, perhaps?
Yeah, when we both started, I started with my probably most famous movie, and I worked my way down to like the obscure. You're working your way in reverse.
Okay.
Sort of. Because my last one, I don't think anybody's fucking heard of. Like, it's one of those movies that I've mentioned to people, and they go, I don't think it really exists.
I will say I haven't seen this movie, but I definitely know this movie poster. So I have seen of it and heard it, but I've never actually seen the movie.
Yeah, and it's totally different from my other movies, which is why I saved it for last, because the other ones are mostly horror, kind of leaning horror, leaning science fiction fantasy.
Sure.
This one leans light sci-fi.
Right.
It's almost a rom-com, almost. Like, it's called Electric Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
It's about...
Go on.
Virginia Madsen, actually, is probably the most famous person in it. The other star was Lenny Van Dolin, who... He's been in a bunch of stuff you might have seen him in. But, reasonably speaking, you know Virginia Madsen.
Was he friends with Squiggy? Is it that Lenny? No?
Hey!
Different Lenny?
Hey, girl.
That was creepy.
Thank you. I practiced. So, this movie came out in 1984. So this is right when personal computing had become a thing.
Right.
So everybody now has their Commodore 64, their Odyssey, their, I don't know, ColecoVisions. There was a bit of concern about computers taking over your life.
Right.
So this movie is about a guy. He makes good money. I don't remember what he did. He's probably a stockbroker or some bullshit. He gets his whole house wired with computers.
Right.
He can walk in, the lights go on, and the computer talked to him, had a little face.
Sure.
Which I still think is something that the computer industry is missing out on. I want my computer to actually have a face that looks at me and talks.
Right.
And it has this voice that talks like Torgo. Hello, Miles. His name was Miles.
Right.
And he'll say to the computer, I don't remember the computer's name, I'm sure if I was to look long enough... Edgar. By the end of the movie, his name is Edgar. He chooses a name for himself, which kind of reveals where this is going. Miles walks into the house. He goes, computer, coffee pot. And coffee pot turns on. Bedroom lights. Like, it was the beginning of this sort of the science fiction concept that you're used to in, like, year 2010 movies.
Right.
But now it's 1980, whatever. he's in love with Virginia Madsen. She's a celloist or violinist. He brings her home one night. They're talking, and the computer starts to gain feelings for Virginia Madsen.
Right.
It gets to the point where Miles can't have this. The computer is slowly but surely, like, starting to get aggressive. He's given himself a name. He now walks as a man. He doesn't walk like a man. He's still a computer. I love her. And he's like, you can't have her. You're a computer. You're a fucking pile of chips. Yeah, I need her. And you're like, oh, it gets creepy.
Right.
The computer locks him in the apartment. It's like sending waffle irons after him. There's Pac-Man on the computer screen.
Okay.
It gets dark.
Right.
But it's, again, at the end, the good guy perseveres. There's one scene in the movie that I remember distinctly. And I recently downloaded this film so I could just see whether this scene was good enough.
Right.
Whether it's as cool as I remember it. Was that he taps, Edgar, taps into the phone line so he can listen to her play at whatever theater she plays
right.
at.
Right.
So you see her playing the right. cello and the orchestra. It's synthesizing on his screen, like even
sure.
like our recording is right now.
Right.
And then he chimes in with like 8-bit remix tunes. And so it was like this synthesized remixy thing in 1984. It's like, that's pretty cool. That's a unique little thing you got going.
Sure.
But it's a bad movie. It's not good.
Right.
It is quite the opposite of good. But I do remember it fondly as one of those like HBO shitty movies that I would watch 1,000 times over. But
sure, sure.
Electric Dreams. I need her.
Yeah, I can see that. When did this come out?
84, British-American science fiction romantic comedy drama. That's what it says at the wiki.
it just hit all the tags.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what else? I mean, I just described the movie to you. What else would you call it?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, no, it does. It definitely feels like one of those mid-80s kind of, I get that rom-com vibe from it. You know, very mannequin, very, you know, we're
yes.
still very mannequin lawnmower man. You know, we're kind of tapping into the possibilities of having all of this technology around us all the time.
Lawnmower Man's another great one.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody have like giant cell phones in it, like the size of a, you know, small car.
I think what's killed me about the Lawnmower Man now is anytime when I was watching Lost, was when Lapidus. Every time he'd be on screen, access tonight.
The reason I bring it is I'm in the middle of watching Breaking Bad on Netflix.
Good.
And there's the one scene where they go back in the day to show the two brothers who are mm-hmm. looking for revenge when they're little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the uncle reaches over and answers the cell phone that is literally like the size of a case of soda. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I know what it is, because when I was a kid, that's what cell phones looked like.
Right.
You know? And I'm thinking, how many kids nowadays, not even kids, you know.
Why does that guy have a walkie-talkie?
17 or 18-year-olds, yeah, looking at it go, where'd the sat phone come from? Or, you know,
yeah.
Why is he talking into a shoebox? Like, they have no concept of what that is, because to them, a smartphone is something, you know, that doesn't have a keypad on it and that I can watch movies on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
your encyclopedia is calling.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Electric Dreams is very much the imagined tomorrow tech today.
Yes, yes. Complete tangent. This is making me think of,
yes.
You ever play Cyberpunk? Tabletop role-playing game?
Oh, I'm aware of it. I never played it.
I had one of the source books called Chromebook. Which was
okay.
the stuff that you can buy, you know, dermal implants and everything. Mm-hmm. And one of them was like Office of Tomorrow for like, you know, 250 million credits. You got a briefcase and you open up the briefcase and it was a fax machine and a phone that had a cord, you know, because this is the way of the future. And it was just like, wow, you know, we really did think that way back in the
80s. Oh, my God. Watch Hackers.
Yes.
Which is, it has its moments as kind of a good, bad movie.
Sure.
Angelina's really young, mm-hmm. pixie cut.
Mm. Right.
Anyway, there's in the first 20 minutes, there's a scene where they go looking at her laptop.
Right.
And they spew out techno jargon bullshit.
Right.
That was dated when the movie came out.
Sure.
Oh, it's got a 14.4 baud modem. And you're like, I got a 28.8.
Yeah, exactly.
And the movie just came out on video. What are Angelina Jolie's breasts?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I do. I have a heart for anything of that nature. There's wonderfully so. If any of you guys like radio programs, you must. You're here. If you go to archive.org, they have the old, like, year 2000, Rod Serling, Mr. Planet X sort of old precursor to Twilight Zone radio shows.
Nice.
And if you want some, like, bad science fiction, like, it's the microwaves that have caused the robot to come alive! And they all call them robots, which makes me happy.
All right.
All those episodes are back there, and it's old episodes from Rod Serling and, Robert Heinlein, great fucking nice. Sci-fi authors. So if you like really bad science fiction, like, it was we who were the monsters type episodes,
yeah.
All that shit, it's great.
Nice.
But that leads us to you, sir, and
yeah.
Your final.
That was your last, right? Electric Dreams?
That was my fifth. I have a couple other
honorable mentions.
But this.
I went with this one. This is a Joel Silver production. Mm-hmm. From 1991, I adore this movie.
What's funny is I think people, what I think's great about this is that there are people, I would think, that are regular listeners, or like, we know what this is. We're
that may have an idea, yeah.
I like that.
This movie was horribly marketed, because it was marketed as like a serious kind of shadowy action movie, when it is really anything but. It is a riff on all of those movies. But it really, the marketing took itself way too serious. Almost like the marketing for Nightbreed was just completely wrong.
Right.
In the same vein, this marketing was terrible.
Well, this came out like after the Die Hards.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. It was in that, like, we're trying to capitalize.
1991, American action comedy, Hudson Hawk.
Yes. I didn't want to outright ruin it for you.
I'm sorry. It's a fantastic movie.
It is underrated.
It is. Once you get past the fact that it is not the movie that it purported to be, it is a amazingly entertaining movie, and it's got some really cool premises to it too. The fact that that Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello are basically cat burglars, and they know how much time they have before security guards will get alerted or before alarms go off or before they're discovered. And they time that by memorizing the lengths of songs in, you know, popular American media.
I do love it. It's in that first, like, 30 seconds where they go, ba-da-ba, like, is it, I don't remember the songs they use. But
yeah,
they end
427, Swinging on a Star. Okay.
On a Star.
So you've got Danny Aiello in the computer room keeping an eye on the security guards. You got Bruce Willis on a little skateboard, you know, making his way through the hallway. Would you like to swing on a star? Because they're keeping time as to how much time they have to pull the heist off.
Premise.
Andy McDowell in it. James Coburn is in it. Sandra Bernhardt is in it.
Can I'm glad you mentioned it.
Okay.
Is there anything wrong with the fact that I think she's kind of hot in this film?
No.
Because she's a weird one.
But it's early in her. She's not annoying yet. Yeah. She hasn't gone completely off the rails.
She's not an attractive woman overall. She's not like the hottest woman. She's like a weird kind of weird sex appeal thing.
But
she
in this movie, you're kind of like, I'd hit it.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that, watching it going, yeah.
It's. I have the same feeling about very early Margaret Cho. I look at her and be like, oh, I'd hit it. And I look at her now and I'm like, no in hell.
That's interesting.
But when she was younger, she had the kind of edginess to her. The edginess took over.
Yeah, that's what it is.
The edginess countered the, you know, she wasn't a swimsuit model kind of thing. But the personality, it was. So you've got, and you've also got Richard E. Grant, Darwin Mayflower.
Ah.
I'm the villain. And the manager in Spice World, for those of you who were curious.
Is this specifically because when you walked into the apartment today, there was Spice Girls playing?
No, it's just one of those things. I saw him in that other movie, and I'm like, holy shit, he did do something after Hudson Hawk.
Just as a quick, a short, Rob shows up into my apartment. I have my playlist going, and my playlist has 1,000 songs. They're not all fucking gems, and I don't know what it was, Wannabe or Spice Up Your Life or some shit was on. And Madison just looks, and without, like, she hasn't looked up from her phone. Rob has not had time to say hello to her. She goes, it's his playlist.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Frank Stallone is in this movie. playing the head of the New Jersey crime family, Cesar Mario. Cesar Mario, Anthony Mario, the Mario brothers. It is such a fun movie, though. And again, endlessly quotable. There are so many lines from this movie. The evil organization that is working against Hudson Hawk, they're all named after candy bars.
And there's the one of my favorite lines, which I said to you when we were discussing this before the show. Yes, candy bars. It's a whole lot better than 6 months. We were named after venereal diseases.
Exactly.
How do you like to live your life named as chlamydia?
Who's the one? Who's the guy from, what is it, CSI Miami?
Oh, I wouldn't.
The redheaded guy who's like the kiss of death for a number of different TV shows and movies.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Everybody is right now yelling at their fucking speakers.
David Caruso.
Very good.
He plays Kit Kat. Probably his best role.
He
doesn't speak the entire movie. Yes. He speaks in business cards.
I don't remember that. I do remember he didn't talk.
He pulls that little business card, and he'll flip the business card out, and it'll say whatever he wants to say. And
I totally forgot
this. Part of your brain in the back of your mind goes, how many fucking business cards must this guy carry? And they riff on that towards the end of the movie. He's masquerading as a statue, hiding out in the art gallery, and he gets shot and falls over, and 10,000 business cards spill out from his tunic.
I had no idea that was David Caruso.
Yes, David Caruso.
That's so funny.
I
frequently say, anytime you mention the movie, and I use it in common parlance, I say, Buffy, ball.
Yeah,
anytime
absolutely.
Somebody throws a tennis ball.
Such a good number of quotes. Here's what I wanted to point out.
Oh, please.
Its effect on TriStar Pictures, because this was put out under the TriStar banner.
That's the one with the Pegasus.
Yes. Hudson Hawk has the dubious distinction of being the final film produced by TriStar Pictures prior to their being bought out and merged with Columbia Pictures. Because Hawk had lost so much money, the Sony Corporation had to salvage TriStar by purchasing its remaining stock and by reorganizing the company as part of the recently formed Sony Pictures Entertainment. So
this
there
movie
you go.
Sank a studio.
It put the final nail in the coffin of TriStar Pictures. But if you get the opportunity to watch this movie,
I agree.
Think of it as, I know going in, this is a silly movie.
I said I agree before you said what you were
I'm
about
talking
to say.
The rest of the listeners out there.
I was commenting on my comment.
Okay.
Riffing on me. Go ahead, please.
You are so your wife's husband.
Just talk over me, that's fine.
The end of the movie where they have to save the nun, 2 minutes in, what was it, 2.5 minutes in, 3.5 minutes out, 6-0-0, swinging on a star. The fact that they have these little suction cup rocket launchers in the golf bag, and they're just, we were walking along, singing a song, and they're just hamming it up the whole time. Brilliant movie.
Do you think it would have done better if it had been marketed properly? If they didn't make it try and be a hard-boiled, he's a cop. Or rather, not he's a cop, but they're cat burglars.
I don't
they're
know, because
run.
I almost fear that if they marketed it correctly and it did well, they would have tried to make sequels out of them, and then it would have just become like Police Academy.
Hudson Hawk, Mission to Moscow.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you've got, I think it was Richard Maltin, one of the, or Leonard Maltin, one of the premier, movie critic guys. Yeah. Basically had said right around Police Academy 5 or 6 that I have no idea why humanity continues to let these movies to exist. If they make another sequel, I'm just quitting my job. Is it to say that's how bad this one is?
Mm-hmm.
And 3 weeks later, the writer announced that they were making a number 7, and he said, the whole reason I'm doing this is because I want Leonard Maltin to quit his job.
I would do that, too.
So, I mean, it's,
that's wonderful.
It's actually kind of cool, the fact that he cared enough that earworm got back to him and said, okay, let's call his bluff. We're gonna get the whole group back together again. We're going to make another 7. I'm waiting for your resignation letter.
Exactly. Call Gutenberg.
Yeah, exactly.
He's coming.
But me and Fact Check Manny had a yearly ritual where I do Thanksgiving at my folks' house, mm-hmm. do the whole, turkey and dessert thing. And then I would shoot down to Manny's place, and we would do a separate little just Thanksgiving, just the two of us hanging out, and we would pull out Hudson Hawk, and we would watch Hudson Hawk, and then we'd just play video games for the rest of the day. But that was our Aww. Yearly thing, where we would sit there and watch Hudson Hawk. And we would recite the whole movie the entire time.
Of course.
Ah, Rome. I did my first bareheaded strangulation here.
I've learned from the show and from hanging out with you that I, and it's a notorious fault of mine, that I butcher quotes.
Right.
Like a motherfucker. You keep entire movies in your head.
It's amazing. Unfortunate, really.
I only have one or two of those. Like mine, I think maybe Willy Wonka, maybe Ghostbusters.
Good one.
Most of Ghostbusters.
Right.
You know, probably various spots in various movies, you know, a chunk of Flash Gordon, a chunk of Groundhog Day, something like that. You have, like, I have no doubt in my brain that you could redo Hudson Hawk for me right now as a musical.
But I've probably seen this movie, no exaggeration, probably 30, 35 times.
That's fair.
I mean, so it just, and when you are entertained by something as much as that, and you have friends that are, and you watch it together, you know, it just becomes, like, imprinted on your brain.
Touche.
No. Know? Hey, Mr. Hawk, I got your stamps.
What's funny is some of those lines, like that one specifically, it rings a thing. Like, I remembered Kit Kat didn't talk. I didn't remember the cards.
But Butterfinger, big, huge, you know, blonde spiked mullet. Dumb as a box of rocks.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Good stuff.
I had a bunch of movies that I didn't get to make my list. Did you have a lot?
I didn't. I basically hit my five and I said, you know what? I'm going to keep it there.
For somebody who loves as much shit, like, as much shit film as I've watched, like, I've seen episodes of Mystery Science Theater without the bots. Like, I've seen those movies, you know, Night of the Lepus. And,
sure. Pod People.
Yeah, Pod People and the Killer Shrews.
Trumpy.
Trumpy has stupid powers. So I had to knock a lot off the list. Here's just my honorable mention, of course, of Jim Cotta, which we've gotten into before.
Sure.
Robot Jocks, which is about giant robots fighting in a war. It's almost like Pacific Rim if Pacific Rim didn't care. Arena, which is about an alien pro wrestling federation.
Samuel L. Jackson in that movie?
It's not a new movie.
Because there's a movie on Netflix called Arena that Samuel L. Jackson is in.
No, this is not that one.
Oh, okay.
No. This is, let's see, this would be,
because you were
going to
make me suddenly go home and watch it.
No. An intergalactic fighting competition between champions of various worlds has traditionally been won by a species much larger and stronger than humans. Entering the contest, a human finds, see full summary, has to battle against not just his...
See full summary.
Has to battle against not just his opponents and his self-doubts, but the corrupt system itself. Yeah, no, that one stars Paul Satterfield, like... The only person in this movie you might know is Claudia Christian, who played Ivanova on Babylon 5. Like, that's it.
Gotcha.
Anyway. Cloak and Dagger, starring Dami Coleman, where it's a secret spy imaginary friend movie. There's tons. I love them all. I probably could, on my own, do an entire episode where I just sat and listed them, like Bubba and Forrest Gump.
Right.
I got your Flash Gordon. I got your... Short Circuit 2, you got your...
Kind of like we did a while ago on the Harold Ramis list, where I just sat there and...
We just pile drive
completely ripped right through it. You're like, whoa, what are you doing?
Stop shooting, Tex.
Hey.
Nice shooting, see? I fuck them up. Nice shooting. So that's, I think that's us for now.
That is. That's our bad movie. Our great bad movie episode.
Great bad movies. Please post on the Facebook what you guys think of your favorite bad movies. I know we didn't have... There's a couple of these episodes where we didn't have a chance to... ask before we did, so these are just us. You get to enjoy us.
Absolutely.
Not us enjoying
raw
you.
Raw us. Yes. Pure us.
Uncut Caribbean, Colombian us.
Yes. Yes, but you can hit us on the Facebook, facebook.com/somethingcast. The website, somethingcast.com. We love your comments in the forum section. On the Twitter at STSTcast. And at the Gmail at somethingsomethingcast@gmail.com.
I'm James Hatton.
I am Podcast Rob.
And enjoy your shitty movies.
Absolutely. See ya.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Rockstar.